Okay, did I miss someone while we were getting that set up? Okay, well, let's get started today. You know, a couple sessions ago, we were talking about face-to-face training. We had a webinar and we had a couple of PLCs. We talked about face-to-face coming out of COVID now. We talked about our scans and, you know, how everyone is struggling with this, whether it was distance learning or keeping people apart, and of course the grantees did struggle, and with our target groups who, you know, many didn't have computers or know how to use them, internet access, even keeping phone contact was difficult for some. And we were all over the map in terms of the target audience, which is what this program is all about. As we track through, and now we're coming out of COVID and everyone's getting vaccinated, we're coming to the conclusion, and our webinar and PLC at that time was going towards, well, let's start moving towards face-to-face again. What can we do in person with lessons learned? And we went over that last month. Then we got our welcome news, which we'd been waiting for 9 months, of the new announcements of 18 grantees. And again, congratulations to those 18 grantees, FY21. They join a group of 26 FY2020 grantees. That gives us 44 in our active family of Environmental Workforce Development Job Training grantees. Now, in 2019, there were some funky budgetary things going on, and they decided that maybe they would go to 2 years instead of one. And so there wasn't an FY19 competition. There was one in 18. There were 18 awards then. In 17, there were six, and in 16, there were seven. What that demonstrates is the success of this program, in my mind. We used to have about five $200,000 grants, and we went to about seven. And the grants were usually awarded on available money in EPA, mostly come out of Office of Solid Waste, which is Office of Land Management, and then what they could cobble together from other program offices. That slowly increased from seven in 2016 up to 18 in 2018. And then we got this nice jump. We had the zero in 2019, but they did an early competition in 2020, 26. And of course we've dropped down to 18 in 2021. Excuse me. A combination of hay fever and the back end of my cold. What this is pointing out is this program is gaining steam. What it also points out, and some very interesting comment today, is it's an EJ program. It's an environmental justice program. And we're going to be talking about this later, about funding and what's happening in EPA and in this administration. We're going to talk about that at a future date. But looking forward, what we're going to do today is, again, talk a little bit about if you got the grant, what you should be doing now, how you may be interacting with your regional coordinator and with the grants office, and more importantly, how you're going to be handling your internal meetings and what kind of meetings you should be having, who should be invited to them, how to get your work plan ready for EPA. Now that you've got the grant, you know, now how are we going to do it? So we're going to talk about that first, and then we're going to talk a little bit about sustainability for those people who weren't funded this year. We have four grantees and from 2018 who haven't been re-upped, and four from 2017. These we consider alumni. And what we want to emphasize with those organizations is hang in there. Keep improving your grant, stay in the loop, continue working with your regional coordinator. We have many programs. It's not unusual that a program may not be funded for a couple of years, sometimes several years, and then come back with a new program. They've been there, done it. St. Nick is a good example. They're not on the call today, but they were funded, unfunded, funded, unfunded. They got a 21 grant. So we encourage those people that were not funded or didn't receive re-ups to look at some sustainability issues, which we'll talk about a little later, and get their program together. And more important, we're only months away from a new announcement for the FY22. If EPA stays to its old schedules, this summer we might expect a request for applications. We call them RFAs now instead of RFPs. They'll be looking, they'll give you 60 days to write your proposal. Well, if you start backing that up from this summer, say even August, you start backing this up. We used to say it takes 6 months if you're a new program to get started. You've got to realign all your partnerships. You've got to get your employers together. One thing about this program, the nice thing I like about it, it's an annual competition. So if you don't get it 1 year, if you could sustain yourself, or if you're a new grantee and a new organization and haven't been funded, you can go back, improve your proposal, and go in just a few months later. And that's exactly where we're at now. There were people who were not funded, did not have sufficient numbers on their ranking criteria. They'll get a chance to talk to their regional coordinator. They'll go back, re-examine critically, have a chance to go to our all-grantee meeting and network with other grantees to beef up their proposal. And before you know it, it'll be summer, and it'll be time to submit your proposal. And when that 60-day announcement comes out, you should have your ducks pretty well lined up. So you've got those 2 months to write your proposal, a dynamite proposal that'll be funded. Again, like this time, you submit it, and it'll take, 9 months for that to be processed. And hopefully this time next year, you'll be on the list of the FY22 grantees, and you'll be rolling. So we really encourage those who weren't successful, new grantees and alumni grantees, to keep this thing going, try to keep your teams together, and go from there. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. So before we get too far, we always get news from Washington and what's happening and actually what HMTRI is doing. So Heather, do you want to take over and tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for joining us today. I do appreciate that. And from the HQ side of the house, we do have something to share with you guys. For those of you who aren't already on the listserv that is coming from the Brownfields side of the house, so the EPA Brownfields listserv, HQ did want me to share with you all that there is a webinar that is coming up on Friday, April 23rd. From 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and this is the Brownfield Stakeholder Discussion with Nonprofits and Community Foundation. And they're going to look at how does your nonprofit organization view its role in brownfield cleanup and redevelopment, what benefits and barriers exist to nonprofits leading brownfield cleanup and redevelopment projects, and how can EPA best engage with nonprofit organizations that are most interested in leading brownfield cleanup and redevelopment. Again, that's Friday, April 23rd from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to be sending out the registration link to the listserv, and Mike will have it included in the notes that he sends out on Friday as well, so you can look for that information coming your way shortly. If you don't get the listserv notes or Mike's Friday notes that he sends out to the PLC listserv, just go ahead and send me an email and we can get you guys put on that. You can send it to hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. And we can get you guys added to that listserv and make sure that we get you all the information that you could possibly need. Something else that we always keep repeating every time from the HQ side of things as well is just a reminder that the National Brownfield Conference is slated for September 27th through the 30th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And you can go to brownfields2021.org for more information there. We are looking at having HMTRI is looking at having a booth at the National Brownfields Conference, and that'll be a spot for everybody to be able to place any of their items and kind of really showcase their EWGJT program at the national forum there. So we're really looking at having it be an EWJT booth at the National Brownfields Conference. So we'll be, as we get closer to that date, we'll be having a call for material programs, different things like that. So definitely keep an eye out for that. And then we're also going to be looking at hosting an affiliate kind of event during that time frame as well. So kind of keep an ear out for that, and we'll kind of share more information as we get a little bit closer to that time frame. But again, September 27th through the 30th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and brownfields2021.org for more information. On the HMTRI side of the house, you know, we are coming up to the all-grantee meeting. The all-grantee meeting is May 4th through the 6th from 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern. It'll be virtual via Zoom, and things are really rolling along quite nicely with that. We'll have registration heading your way here very shortly, but I'm actually going to turn it over to Steve to talk to you guys a little bit more about some of the things that we are looking for from you guys. So at this point, I think I'll have Steve jump in.
All right. Thanks, Heather, and good afternoon, everyone, and good morning to the folks in Alaska. I think it's afternoon everywhere else. As Heather mentioned, it is just short of a month away before the virtual all-grantee meeting, and we're looking for volunteers, people that want to be co-facilitators of our breakout sessions, and we're going to have pretty much similar format to last year, where we had two or three co-facilitators for each breakout room. And what the co-facilitator would do would take about 15 minutes to kind of present their program and how it relates to the breakout topic. And then the second co-facilitator would then do the same thing. And then there would be, if there's a third, they would, and then it would be opened up for questions. So that's kind of the format that worked very well last year, and we're going to try it again this year. And so I'm putting together the list of co-facilitators, and so I wanted to ask for your help. Anybody who's interested in being a co-facilitator, please let me know. And just, I know you don't have a copy of the breakout topics in front of you. Let me just kind of quickly run through those so you have an idea of what the topics are this year. Many are very similar to last year. Partnership development, community awareness, and social media. Now, that was a topic that was at the end of the session last year that we weren't able to do that one, so we're putting that in, you know, right up front on day two. Also, community and labor market assessment, substance abuse and program landmines, impact and lessons learned during the pandemic. And then we have recruitment and screening, training strategies in the era of COVID-19, leveraging with partnerships and service organizations, curriculum and training, program tune-up and grant writing strategies. And then we have student retention and support services, tips, tools, and ideas for grantees, graduation, placement, and tracking. So those are the sessions that I'm currently looking for people to volunteer. I have heard from a few that responded and agreed to volunteer, but we're always looking for more. So if you're interested in co-facilitating one of these topics, please let me know. And at the end, I'll give you my email address. And of course, you can always reach out to Mike or Heather, too, and they'll forward any emails that they get to me as well. So we're looking for co-facilitators for these breakout sessions. We're also looking for your help in sending us some videos of your facility or of your program. They don't have to be like high-tech videos. You can even take the videos with like a phone. And you may remember last year, we had an after-hours session where we showed a lot of videos, and those went over remarkably well. And so we're looking for those again. I just received one the other day from an organization, and we need several more. So we're looking forward to those. So if you have a video of your, again, your facility or a description of your program, doesn't have to be even very long. Most of the ones we showed last year were kind of in the 4 to 6 minute time frame, but gave us a nice feel for, you know, what the different programs were. We're also looking for student testimonials, especially student testimonials. So if you have any of those, and those, again, can be in any form. We had some really fantastic ones that were actually video clips from former students that talked about how the program had impacted them. Those are really important. We really would like to have a number of those as well. So we really would like to rely on you to help, you know, provide co-facilitators, and then also any videos or testimonials. So again, my name is Steve Fenton, and my email address is S, first initial of my first name, and then last name Fenton, F-E-N-T-O-N. So sfenton103@aol.com. And so if you have any interest in being a co-facilitator, we would really appreciate your help. And then fantastic if you had any videos or could do a video clip, so, or video, or wanted to do a video tour of your facility. So looking forward to hearing from many of you. Okay, Mike, I guess there's no questions.
Okay, of course, you know, these all great team meetings are no better than all the participants. All we do is put everyone together, and it's your show. And we'll include these breakout sessions and talking points in the, along with Steve's address, in the notes, which you'll get by Friday. So, did someone have any questions regarding that? Go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to share, for those of you who joined us last year, I think you can all attest the videos were a favorite part of, for many folks. Getting to kind of see everybody and highlight some of those different areas. So we do really appreciate those that take some time to share some of that information with us, because that definitely added a really good vibrancy to the meeting.
It's a great chance, even though we really like the in-person. This is the best we can do. The Zoom is pretty good. Now in 22, we're already making plans to meet at the Holiday Inn in Alexandria in August. So we're hopefully going to be back to face-to-face and networking in person. But between now and then, we do the best we can with these Zooms. And they work out pretty good with the breakouts, for those of you who have been there last year. And as I said, this will all be in the notes. Another thing I'm going to include in the notes, besides current meetings and some grant opportunities, is a webinar I think that will be interesting. I found it's put up by one of the TAB grantees, CCLR, and it's about the Moving Forward Act and also about the Build Back Better Act, what that might mean to EPA and in particular to brownfields. And Dave is going to be on that call with other very knowledgeable people about legislation that's moving forward and what we might expect. And of course, you know, the way these things go, by the time the money is authorized, it's already budgeted out. So it's good to know well in advance, even though these are not law yet, there's a place for us. One of the things that they indicated, and I'll send the announcement out in the notes that you may want to read, is if this Moving Forward Act goes through, it's HR 2, it could mean $2.25 billion for brownfields between FY 21 and 25, major. There's been, in this administration, tremendous support for EJ. If the Build Better Act goes through, Build Back Better, that'll also support clean energy, initiatives, environmental justice, which, again, climate resilience, which the president talked about in one of his first executive orders. It will mean more, again, to EJ. I've always considered our project, the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training, more than anything an EJ program. If you want to say, well, why isn't this? This is about jobs. Why isn't it in labor? Two reasons I've always given. One, and primarily, it's EPA's commitment to environmental justice more than anything. Second, of course, is it's very particular to environmental regs and the capability of communities to staff and, of course, give back to their community and employ people from that community in the redevelopment project. So those two things are the answers to the question, why aren't you a labor program? Why aren't you in the Department of Labor? And, of course, it's a very small program. The other interesting thing that's going to be happening that I'm really encouraged about the Environmental Workforce Development Program is that in addition to this increased funding, increased emphasis on environmental justice is also earmarks are reinstated. Now, I don't know how much that will affect our program. Earmarks are usually for much larger projects in specific states, but they had banned earmarks for a while, which is tough for senators and congressmen to not have earmarks, but actually we will likely be moving forward in a world of earmarks, which may to some extent influence our program because mayors love brownfields and of course they really like every opportunity to get photo ops and job training programs, so we fit there too. So let's get back to funding and how these announcements might be made. One thing before we do that, though, I also want to congratulate the NEJAC committee when we're talking about environmental justice. Way back in 1994, there was a executive order signed, and that executive order allowed for environmental justice. It's an interesting executive order, 12898. It goes back to February in 94. And it was about establishing an Environmental Justice Advisory Committee. And that committee was to inform the White House on the needs and the implementation of environmental justice within the agency. It's an obscure but important committee because, of course, we're part of that. And to the impact that they influence training in underserved populations influences environmental workforce training. That executive order has been up and down depending on the administration. It's been up and down and almost out and reinvigorated by President Clinton, pretty much putting in the back closet, but has been reinvigorated and supercharged by President Biden. And he's named this committee. Beverly Wright, an old friend of all of us, you might remember her name, is on that committee, I think 23 or 24 others. And they'll be advising the president on environmental justice issues. And that goes back to what Heather was talking about on the April 23rd, where this administration is seeking out advice and ideas on how we could commit resources to underserved communities in this country and how that fits into pollution, resiliency, and where we're going. So it's just something to keep in the back of your mind. Those of you who were funded just last month, of course, are going to be wondering, what do I do now? I think I've got the funding. Well, not exactly. Not until your funds are authorized to spend. So between now and then, you've got some work to do. And the good thing is it's got to be done by the end of the fiscal. So got to be done by September 31st. But if you back that up, there's still work to do, work and meetings you've got to have. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Probably you've gotten your grants package, perhaps, from the regional coordinators. In the next couple months, you're going to be working on finalizing your work plans and your terms and conditions before you get your funding authorization. Your authorization will probably, hopefully, will come through in September or so, and you can start spending money some of the grantees they're really enthusiastic about this, and they're already planning cohorts. And the takeaway from that is, whenever you get something from EPA, try to respond as quickly as possible. Of course, you have to acknowledge and accept the terms and the conditions, and your administrator has to agree to this. You know, there may be instances where you're going to get this letter from EPA, you've been recommended for funding. You may have to take that in front of city council. If you're a large nonprofit, you're going to have to bring it in front of the board or the tribal industries. You know, it's been 9 months. Things change. There is a possibility that they may have second thoughts or buyers regret that I don't know that we can do this right now. And so there is a possibility that you may not sign this or the head of your organization may not. So you can't totally take it for granted. Certainly, most of you will accept this, and we move on, and you'll get that package from the region, and that'll take you, each region I think is a little different, that they'll take you step by step of what you need to do. But let's talk about what you need to do with EPA is one thing, but what you need to do internally is another. And you're going to have some kickoff meetings. You know, first, you're congratulating yourselves, and maybe in small organizations, the head of the organization's came down and patted you on the back and toasted you for your good work. Larger organizations, the reality sets in. And, okay, who's going to be project officer? Remember, this is just a $200,000 grant over 3 years. Many of you will be working part-time on this project. How are you going to divvy up the time? How are you going to divvy up the money for contractors? You've done this in your budget, but that was 9 months ago. So you've got to relook at this. You could forget a lot. So you've got to pull that grant application out and go over it with a fine-tooth comb. For some of you, it'll be a slam dunk. You knew what you wrote. You know who's in charge. The same person is still there. You've got it figured out as far as their time allotments. Are they going to be working on this project plus one or two or three others? How are you going to do it? You've got your contractors lined up. Those of you who are being re-upped, it's a lot easier job. For those of you who are first time, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got to get those time commitments of your principals. You know, are we going to have a placement officer? How much time is he going to spend? When is he going to spend it? How many hours a week? How are we going to pay him? Where is this funds coming from? Who are we expecting money to come from for leveraging? You're going to have a series of meetings. Probably the first one is very internal with the head of your organization and making sure everyone's signing off. I agree. This is fine. You know, John Doakes can work quarter time on this project or full time, whatever it is. We're going to two approaches. One person will go full time and he's going to be wearing multiple hats, or we're going to be having someone doing placement, someone in charge of technical training and student retention, perhaps someone in recruitment and placement, someone that's an overall project officer. Well, before you get too far into the weeds, you're going to have to decide this. So you want to have your internal meetings first, and you really want to get the okay of the people in charge. So everyone's on board. You don't want to throw any surprises later. We did not know what was involved in this grant, and we did not know it was going to take so much time, and we really didn't know we committed to this. So this is the time when you do this, because you've still got escape clauses. You've still got possibilities of working on that work plan and your terms and conditions until everything is finalized. And and remember, on this grant, we had Plan A and Plan B. So there may be a little bit more examination in terms of what you're going to be doing, starting training perhaps in October, November. Some people are gung-ho, and they'll be starting in October. Some will just really not really get going until October, and they may be planning their first cohorts towards the end of the year, or maybe in the beginning of next year. The beauty of this grant is everyone is different. So some will be getting cohorts in early. They may have an existing program and it's just a continuation, and others are starting from scratch and it's going to take them a little longer. So these kickoff meetings, we talk about first the internal meetings before you go anywhere. Find out where you're at. Make sure you're still going to do this thing. Get your commitments from people and when they're going to commit and what they're committed to, what they're going to be responsible for. Then you could start going public. Once you've done that, you've talked to a regional coordinator. And hopefully a lot of you have already talked to the regional coordinators. You get to know them. And, of course, if you come to the all-grantee meeting, you're going to get to know them even better. Now you can start talking about going public. Now, at this point, you're really beginning your grant with no money, but you're beginning your awareness campaign. You're really, in your announcement, or press releases, there'll be a series of radio announcements, press releases, press conferences. Now, every grantee is different. Some go large, some go small. Some will get this grant and they'll have their partners lined up. They're going to stay close to the vest and they're going to do their thing. Others are going to go huge and they're going to go big. They're going to, of course, they're going to city council, maybe because they have to, and announce the program. They're going to talk about the great things they're going to do. Some will have photo ops. Some will be explaining their goals and objectives, their networking. And I'm going to speak to the advantages of that. If you go big and you're able to go big, you're going to bring in other people who want to join and be on the bandwagon. And you're actually, as I said earlier, you're doing your awareness before this grant even starts. You're going to be saying, we're going to be starting this training program. We'll be looking for people with these in these communities who are going to have great opportunities. It's going to be tough competition to get in. There's going to be a contact person, which will you'll already have decided who that's going to be, what your plans are for your recruitment meetings and your information meetings. You'll be doing radio announcements, press conferences, press releases, perhaps photo ops arranged with your congressman or state representative. You might say, is this pandering? No, it's awareness. When you bring big people into your program and they're associated with you, you bring funding organizations into your program. This is not so much, well, it's about your program awareness, but it's about announcing to other city, county, and state agencies that you're open for business and you're looking for money. And what you want to do at this point is you want to bring partners in. If the governor or if the state representative, the congressman, is talking your program up, you're going to get stakeholder involvement and leveraging from HHS, from community development. These people will be at the table. If you have a press conference or a meeting with the more influential people in your community, the people who have the ability to fund your program, who might not ordinarily even know that you exist, if you're one of those quiet programs, are going to say, well, we're going to commit. We didn't know you exist, but we want to join. We want to get in on this program. And we all know how important leveraging is. You're going to need a lot of help from Health and Human Services, transportation, certainly from employers, but also all the other support services that could be provided to you. If you go quietly, they may not know you exist. If you go big, they're going to find out about it, and they're going to be eager to help. The higher level that you're getting support from, the more likely you're going to be getting leverage support from all the other people you need to get. And I always remember when we were in Charlotte, and the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce said, what's important is you want to walk into the offices with someone important. Not so much that they're going to help you themselves, but they're going to introduce you people who will help you. So the lesson learned here, when you start doing these public meetings, I would suggest go as big as you can. Go large and follow that up with beefing up your partnerships, particularly beefing up your leverage partnerships. Start expanding your employer, potential employer base, which you'll be, if you start training in the fall, you'll be looking at in the winter or perhaps early spring, you'll be leaning on them. You want to beef up your key shareholders. You know, it's been 9 months, so everyone's been kind of silent. We've always encouraged people to keep in touch with your stakeholders and partners and leverage partners, but now you've got to pull out and pull out all the stops and try to have meetings to the extent that you can with them to get them going. I want to talk a little bit about sustainability. Anyone have any questions about going big or have had that experience? I think some of you have gone large and had good photo ops. Anyone out there that would like to contribute regarding that? Well, I'll tell the story then. We were in New York, and we were putting on one of these workshops in person, face-to-face, and the announcement was made. And, of course, we had a very tight schedule, just like the all grantee meeting, and everything was laid out. And then all of a sudden, in comes the state representative and the congressman and photographers, and they took up lots of our time. We were angry, but we didn't realize this was pretty important to their program. And at first, we were kind of irritated, but then we came to realize this was really good for our program, and we kind of changed our whole approach towards photo ops. And same thing happened in Boston, where Mayor Molino at the time, he used us as a photo op to introduce some legislation, but it was good for our program. So rather than being defensive about this kind of thing, it could help your program. So let's talk about, for a second, we're going to talk about sustainability and what happens if this goes the other way. Those of you who may not have been funded, some of you have been around for a long time, and for whatever reason, you know, these grants are awarded on the curve. They've got so much money, and you've got to, based on that ranking criteria and some other criteria, they'll take the top $200,000 grants until they run out, and those people get the money. And you may have a grant, you may have an awesome program, and we've seen this, and it breaks our heart, incredible programs that just were not put on paper sufficiently to score high. And they may have missed by 2 points. You hear many stories, we missed by 2 points, we missed by a point. If only we would have done these other things. And when you're writing the grant, this is a hard grant to write. And it is tough. What we see, we've always said, don't give up. The beauty of this program that I really like, we're talking about annual competitions. When I heard they might go to 2 years, I was really disappointed. The beauty, there's two things that are great about this program. One, annual competitions. If you don't make it this year, it's time to start on the next year. It's time right now, and we're going to be starting in the next future, in the next PLCs. It's time to start working on your FY22 grant proposal. So it isn't that long. It's not like you're gone for 5 years when no one may even be around. If you could sustain yourself for a year, through extensions, through some interim financing, and we'll talk about some other things, you're ready for the next proposal. Many organizations have done that, and it works. We've had many come back from being unfunded. Some have waited out a year, some two, some more than two. So the moral of that story is keep in touch. Stay on the all grantee meetings. Stay on the PLC. Stay, go to the webinars. Go to Brownfield's national meeting. Keep your name in the hat. Keep your partners close to you. And we always say, go to your partners, and this is tough. This was a tough competition. We didn't get it this year, but we're ready. We're preparing already for next year. We really want this program in our community. Will you stay on board? And by doing that, they're going to say, yeah, we'll stick with you. And you want to keep those partners close to you. Keep them in touch and keep working on the program. Now, you're going to say, well, that's easy for you to say, but who's going to pay our salaries? What are we going to do? And there are some strategies that have been used and some that work. The one that's probably not as viable because it's only a $200,000 grant is try to get extension from EPA. We just went through COVID. So EPA is open to extending your grant if you have funds available. These extensions will be at no cost to the government, of course. So if you've got money left and you can redirect that money to keep your program going, that might be the first thing you want to try. That might mean reducing your offerings, cutting class sizes. You can work with EPA on that and see what you need to do. The fact that we had COVID for a year, everyone's different. Some may have funding left over, some may not. Go for the extensions. You may want to go for partner support. If you've had a program in the past and weren't funded, you've probably got a lot of friends out there. And we've had cases where partners have continued support at a lower level, but add support. They will help you with your program and explaining that you're going to resubmit and you'd like to keep something going. You'd like to keep your organization intact. You may also want to combine some of these strategies. For example, provide refresher training for a price for your successful grantees or successful grants, graduates. You might start offering some for fee training to keep you going. You may have to go to some user fees. You're becoming a nonprofit social entrepreneurial organization to carry you over. If none of those things are possible, you can't get money from partners, supporters. You're not the mayor's office may have discretionary funds they'll throw at you to keep your program in a planning stage, to keep your team together. Go after all of these things, and in every case, explain to the fact that you didn't get this year. It was very competitive. You're going to go back, and you're going to expand your grant and your partnerships, and you'd like some carryover funding. That has happened. If you're associated or work with a community college, they often have the ability to do that. Now we start talking about merging. You may decide to take your program and merge it with someone else. You might merge it into a community college program, or many community colleges are willing to throw some money at a program on a experimental basis or on a planning basis. You may integrate with their credit program, or they may decide to start a non-credit program and support you in that way. You may also, if push comes to shove and you're out in the cold, you may see, to the extent that you merge with another nonprofit, there are many community development corporations, there are many training organizations. We've got people like Fortune and Ubero who provide many services. And they're a moving train, and we're suggesting going to them and adding on another component. And the way you approach them is, I see you're providing all these training and social services. Would you be interested in environmental training? And there may be many that will, and this is also applies to new grantees who have never applied and don't have the size. They don't have the leverage rather than try to do it on their own, we encourage them link up with someone that's a rolling train that's successful, might have Department of Labor funds, and you may be able to convince them, would you be interested in starting an environmental workforce program? And in addition to that, we'll go for EPA funding next year. And so there are strategies, and I guess what I'm summing us up is just don't quit and go home. You've done a lot of work over the year, and just don't treat this grant like a starfish or shrimp that when the water goes away, you just dry up. I think people have done this and shown that it demonstrated that it works. And I think for those of you who weren't funded this year, for those of you who were funded but may face this issue next year, start thinking about that. And, of course, we've always told people, as soon as you get this grant, start planning for sustainability and what are you going to do when these grant funds end. And hopefully you're going to recompete. But what happens if you're not successful? You know, start planning for that now. So does anyone have any questions regarding sustainability or what you should be doing now? Or now that you got the funds, you're wondering, what am I going to do now? Or observations on what your program has done?
Mike, this is Pam from ECA. We got the package from our regional coordinator, and Gianna Rosati really laid out everything that she needs from us to go forward. So we've been meeting to go over all the materials. We need to rebudget a little bit because one of our partners is out of the picture. So we know what we'll do, but some things have changed. So we're in the process of getting all that back to Gianna.
That's a very good point, Pam. This is 9 months ago when you wrote this. And things change, personnel change. Your curriculum may very well have changed. This is not a stagnant program. Your labor market assessment may come up with the fact that you may have to tweak some courses. This is your escape route and your opportunity. Once that work plan is locked down with the regional office, now you're going to have to go back and change it later. So this is a good time to do exactly what you're doing. You may have to relook. You know, later on, anyone who was in the grant as a partner and they change, you're going to have to go back and talk to your regional coordinators, and that affects it. But right now you're still in the planning stages, so you're in a good position. But I would reexamine the whole program and say, okay, because of COVID, have things changed? Has my labor market changed? There may be some new emphasis going on this next year revolving climate change and resiliency. So we may be making changes anyway in the next several months. Things were so different 9 months ago than they are today as far as emphasis from the White House, so which might translate into emphasis from EPA, you know. So, but you've got a very good point. I'm glad to hear that you got your package and you're working with Gina. That's fantastic. But,
thanks.
Anyone else get those packages? Rita, did everything go out in your region? Okay, Rita's quiet. Well, as I said, those of you who got grants, it sounds like you're well on your way. I wouldn't sit on those changes too long. The sooner you respond to EPA's requests, and the sooner you're going to get authorization to spend funds, We also have to remember that regional coordinators are real busy at this time because they're also dealing with the other side of the house, the other grantees, the ARC cleanup assessment grants. And so we're right in there with everyone else as far as the grants office is concerned. So, and, you know, I would plan on delays rather than anything else. Any other comments? Okay. Well, good. I'm looking forward to everyone signing up for a session at the all grantee meeting on the 4th. And we will see you all. If you have any questions, just respond to the notes. And we'll send those out on Friday. So with that, anything else, and we'll conclude. Okay. Well, thanks everyone.
Thank you
for joining the conversation today. We'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Mark. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.